Going to read this morning, Canto 3, Chapter 27. Text 13. Little background. This chapter is called Understanding Material Nature, and chapter 27 comes after chapter 26. And chapter 26 is that really complicated Sankhya chapter, the unfolding of the material elements, and from this comes that, and from that comes the next thing, and the cause and the effect of how Krishna does it, how he manifests the 24 elements of creation. And at the end of that chapter he presents the purpose why all of that involved explanation is detachment through knowledge, and identification with the self instead of the non-self, and then the self looking to the Supreme Self in devotion. In other words, the fruit of Sankhya, just as it's in Bhagavad Gita, the first half of chapter 2 is Sankhya. Then in chapter 7, a few verses on Sankhya. In chapter 13, it's Sankhya. Why is that an important part of a life of devotion? Well, knowing what's what and who we are and who we aren't is necessary. And clearing those misconceptions allows the mind then to properly focus on the Supreme. And, you know, devotion is not just sentiment. There's this nice quote. I'm trying to recall, the gist of the quote is Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicating that while people have beliefs in religion, generally speaking, they don't follow, which was Prabhupada's challenge to persons he met who are Christian, you're not Christian, or something like that. It's because they should follow what Christ said, and you're not following what Christ said, so you're not Christian. In any case, that's just a behavior. Then there's the consciousness behind behaviors, and Sankhya helps to set up a proper spiritual conception of self, dismissing the misconceptions of self, and it assists in the process of devotion. So then, the beginning of 27. This is, the emphasis shifts away from Sankhya to devotion. And devotion means the object is very clear in focus, and then there's very practical instructions on how to lead one's life in devotion. There's practical instructions for householders with their livelihood and how they engage themselves. And then, of course, Prabhupada's purports. So just day before yesterday, discussed verses 11 and 12. Well, we'll read 10, 11, and 12 before 13. He goes very quickly from, you know, distinction from matter and spirit to to discussing a life of devotion, then all of a sudden he speaks about the higher stages of devotion. Because when we're engaged in a life of devotion, while we may be down here, we should know what the goal is, what we're striving for, and why we're striving for it. So he discusses being situated in transcendence. Well, read text 9. One's seeing power should be increased through knowledge of spirit and matter, and one should not unnecessarily identify himself with the body and thus become attracted by bodily relationships. Text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position beyond the stage of material consciousness and should be aloof from all other conceptions of life, thus realizing freedom from false ego. Ta-da! Celebrate. Freedom from false ego. One should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. These sun metaphors are throughout this chapter. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality, Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection, even in the false ego. Although it sounded like false ego went away, it's still around. He is the support of the material cause, and he enters into everything. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eye of the illusory energy. Text 12. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as the sun is realized first as a reflection on water, then again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. I don't want to give those classes all over again, but just very quickly, so minus the beautiful detail of the metaphor, we should see ourselves like the sun. So qualitatively, as spark is to the fire, the individual soul is to the supreme. So the sun is situated in one place, although by the light of the sun, the energy of the sun is distributed everywhere. This is part of this is the energetic and the energy. So matter is energy, living entity is energy, and there's the energetic. So we're like the energetic. And as the energetic is understood, the presence of the energetic is understood, the sun, the presence of the sun is understood by a reflection in a dark room. There's a pot. There's the sun. The sun shines on the pot. We can see in the pot the reflection of the sun that indicate the presence of the sun. And then the glistening of the surface of the water may reflect the light onto a wall. So the reflection on the wall is a reflection from the pot, which is from the sun. So the sun is on the wall. The sun is in the pot, although actually the sun is in the sky. In this way, similarly, presence of Krishna can be understood everywhere. It's the detail is here, so I don't want to retell all the detail. But it's by inference. It's using our intelligence, the discriminating power of the intelligence, to understand. It's not yet bhakti. Bhakti is one can actually see the presence of Krishna eye to eye. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. This is strengthening the intelligence to have the intelligence, on the one hand, withdraw the material conceptions of life and then put forward the spiritual conception of life, the presence of Krishna, even within false ego. All of that's nicely described in the second canto, that very amazing verse about by the process of intelligence one can understand the existence of God. So even the material energies, seeing them in a spiritual conception, one can see the presence of Krishna. If one is detached from the material conception, one has a spiritual conception, and has intelligence is properly guided in these ways. It's, you know, steady intelligence can save one from a lot of trouble. Spiritual intelligence, the trouble of being implicated in matter by misidentification with it, the affinity to try to be the enjoyer of it, and the subsequent features of duality that come from material consciousness, you know, the unwanted part of suffering due to misidentification and attachment. These are helpful. It's not the essence of bhakti, but they're very helpful for bhakti. Lord Kapila is not teaching Devahuti how to be an intellectual. He's the personality of Godhead. She's his mother, or devotee, in that Vatsalya rasa, and he's strengthening her bhakti, because all of this discussion, like all of this discussion, goes back to this original question that Devahuti asks, which is, how do I become free from family attachment? And the circumstances, Kardamuni, after so many thousands of years of their living together as husband and wife, he's now gone. Because as the commitment was made to Swayambhuva Manu, I will marry your daughter, but when there's a son of age to take care of Devahuti, I want to resume going back to the forest and doing my meditation in Satya Yuga. So that commitment was made. Nine daughters, and now Kapila Dev is born of mature age. He's gone, and she's feeling her mind is disturbed, very troubled. One can only imagine living with somebody for thousands of years and then they're gone. Her mind is very troubled. And she's asking Kapila Dev to relieve her of this bewildered state. She even specifically says, it's your energy. You've imposed this energy. Please take it away. And his taking away is not, I mean, in one sense it's something mystical, but in another sense it's devotional. And part of devotional is these things that we're hearing. He's not just, I just go back to that starting point, he's not training Devahuti to be a jnani, or like, you know, an empiric expert. Similarly, for us, to take these things, it's not just learn the push and pull of the material energy, and then somehow we'll be like, we'll go back to Godhead. However, it's to help strengthen our unsteady condition to become steady, by proper discrimination, understanding sambandh again, understanding what's what, is necessary, even in the process of chanting, what to speak of, you know, the execution of our devotional service, in practical terms. There's the notion there's the practical application of the notion. And that which steadies it is having proper conceptions instead of not proper conceptions. It goes back to this thing of Bhaktivinoda saying people have their ideas of religion, but they don't follow it. Why don't they follow it? Well, they don't have the right conception. But so they have a sentiment, and they profess the sentiment, but it's misguided. So Kapila Deva's providing this response, and in response to her question, how to become... After she asks her question, I like this part, he pauses, just smiles. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discloses what he's thinking. And he's thinking, my dear mother, why are you asking this? You're my mother. And I'm the personality of Godhead. You're a pure devotee. And you're only asking this for the benefit of others. So I'll respond. So it's for the benefit of us. How to keep our minds steady, that is, carrying the spiritual conception and not the other kinds, and remain fixed instead of unsteady and not fixed, you know, in the up and down, the sine curve. And how can it become steady? There are a number of ways in this whole, this is understanding material nature in relation to Krishna. It's sambandh again. In the practical execution of our service. Before we come to the prema stage, how are we to see Krishna? You can see Krishna in the prema stage by the anjana of prema, smearing our eyes. And before that, how are we going to stay fixed in seeing Krishna within all things? Here's a very practical advice. And then therefore, in devotion, in all the things that we do. Isn't that a big part of our challenge? You know, like, that's the classic sample of the question, Maharaj, I get the devotional practice part. You know, you get up in the morning and, you know, up till I go to work. I get it. It's really clear. Then I go to work and I sit down and I'm at my little cubicle and Krishna disappears and 5 o'clock bell rings and then I wonder what happened. And then I go back home and, you know, like, etc. So a hand is on our bead bag and chanting our mantra and doing the direct devotional activities. Okay, what about the rest of our life? How do we see Krishna in the rest of our life? I mean, certainly if the awakening of the mood of serving Krishna, which is what Maha Mantra does when we chant properly, that will carry that Krishna consciousness into our lives the rest of the day. And this is also there, that the practical guidance of keeping the intelligence in the proper orientation of seeing Krishna. Okay, so text 13. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego and then in the body, senses and mind. So remember that the 10. One should see the self as one sees the sun. Yeah, text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position. beyond the stages of material consciousness, and should be aloof from all other conceptions of life, thus realizing freedom from false ego. One should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. Then it gives this reflection on pots and on the wall, and then comes this one. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego, and then in the body, senses, and mind. Nice. As the sun makes its presence understood by its being reflected this way, that way. So the self-realized soul can see, although I'm acting in the world, the prior tendency or the material tendency of identifying with the body and the mind. And, you know, the modes of nature that are pushing me, and that's me. I'm the kind of person who fill in the blank. It's the modes of nature. When somebody says something, that's the kind of person I am. Or fill in the other blank. It's just the modes of nature, and then the modes of nature are acting upon the body and the mind. And that's all possible because of the presence of the soul. Without the presence of soul, matter is inert, and the modes of nature aren't active. No, during the pradhan state, the modes of nature aren't active. They're dormant. Send in the time, energy, and the souls, and modes of nature get activated. And then we identify through our good friend, the false ego. And then, you know, we live this struggle. Trying to be happy. Grasping at straws. A drowning man grasping at straws to save them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul thinks, quote, I am this body. But a liberated soul thinks, quote, I am not this body, I am spirit soul. This, quote, I am, unquote, is called ego, or identification of the self. Quote, I am this body, or everything in relationship with this body is mine, is called false ego. But when one is self-realized and thinks that he is an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, that identification is real ego. One conception is in the darkness of the threefold qualities of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the other is in the pure state of goodness called Shuddha Sattva or Vasudeva. When we say that we give up our ego, this means that we give up our false ego, but real ego is always present. When one is reflected, I really like how Prabhupada is taking this metaphor and just massaging it, and he doesn't go somewhere else, he just stays with it and keeps illuminating the message. It's like making sandalwood paste. Just keep. And the fragrance comes, and the cooling effect is made accessible, although it's just a piece of wood. When one is reflected through the material contamination of the body and mind in false identification, he is in the conditional state. But when he is reflected in the pure stage, he is called liberated. The identification of oneself with one's material possessions in the conditional stage must be purified, and what one must identify himself in relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the conditioned state, one accepts everything as an object of sense gratification, and in the liberated state, one accepts everything for the service of the Supreme Lord. Krishna consciousness devotional service is the actual liberated stage of the living entity, otherwise both accepting and rejecting on the material platform, or in voidness, or impersonalism, are imperfect conditions for the pure soul. Second paragraph. By the understanding of the pure soul, called Satya Drik, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A concrete example can be given in this connection. Conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose, and he thinks that the nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks, quote, this beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and should be utilized in his service, unquote. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment, and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, mind and body, in everything. With that correct vision, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord. It is stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one who has engaged everything, dash, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words, in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul or Satya Drik. Such a man has understood things as they are. Satya Drik is repeated because it's in the verse. Satya means truth, Drik means to see, the seer of the truth or the self-realized soul. Again, remember the question that Devahuti has asked. How can I become free from this material attachment? It's your illusory energy, please remove it. So bhakti is that which can remove it, or bhakti is that which prompts the Supreme Lord, or that which comes from us, which indicates to the Supreme Lord we actually want him instead of something else, enjoyment separate from him, because bhakti means enjoying the position of being his servant. So then he removes the illusory energy. In the Canto 1, Chapter 7, the description given by Vyasadeva, or the verses that are describing the realization of Vyas when he sat down in meditation, he followed the instructions of Narada. There's 3-4 verses that are essence verses of the Bhagavatam in a certain way, because from those verses Vyas compiled the Bhagavatam. In his Santarbhas, Jiva Goswami 5 or 6 times takes those verses and analyzes them according to the particular message of that particular Santarbha that he's developing, because they're like roots, and from the roots something grows. So this is one of the something that grows from that root. This is how the mitigation process, what Vyas saw was, he saw the Supreme Lord, not only the Supreme Lord, Purusham Purnam, he saw the whole spiritual world. And then he also saw the illusory energy, and how the illusory energy was under the Supreme Lord's control. He saw the living entity, and the living entity's yaya sam mohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Completely bewildered, sam moha, due to the influence of Maya, then he saw the means of the living entity becoming free from Maya, the influence of Maya. And that's the mitigating process of bhakti. So, nurturing bhakti is something that the Bhagavatam does. It's a devotional text. It's transcendental knowledge infused, this is now, I'm borrowing from Bhaktisiddhanta's teachings in Brahma Samhita, but it's where the internal potency, Ladini Shakti, and the Samvit potency, the knowledge potency of the Supreme Lord, are specifically invested in the Vedas. That portion of the Vedas awakens bhakti. And as bhakti becomes further illuminated, they become further active. The Ladini potency is more ruling than the external potencies. How the covering of Maya can be mitigated. Just continue reading Srimad Bhagavatam and trying to live our lives according to the principles that are described here. So this is discussing how we see ourselves, this particular section. How we see ourselves in relation to the Supreme Lord, as once you see oneself like the sun. So, circumstantially, like it or not, here we are in the material world where the modes of nature are active and there's the elements, the five gross elements making up this body and our mind and false ego. And we're in this envelope, which is a double envelope. And inside the double envelopes, there's a jewel. And we'd like to access the jewel, like to understand the nature of the self. So see, the advice is see the envelopes not as the self, but as indications of the presence of the Supreme. Otherwise, they don't exist, nor can they operate. And it's a proper discrimination. That's what the intelligence is supposed to do, discriminate between one thing and another thing. Proper discrimination of who we are and how we should act in relation to his energy. I'm a devotee. The I in mine. Very, very, it's a refrain throughout the Bhagavatam. How you see yourself and how you see the property of God. You see yourself as part and parcel, and you see the property as his property, meant for his service. The messages of the Bhagavatam help us go to that position, the position that's conducive for bhakti. Like, third time. It's not just an intellectual education, and then we live our lives differently. I really like that statement, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. People have all over the world, they have their religions, but they don't follow them. And here's a big reason why. They don't want to follow them. They like the feeling of, you know, professing God and godly life and so forth, and there, to some degree, that's there, certainly. They're certainly very pious people, but, you know, the transcendentalist, this is the transcendentalist. The message of the Bhagavatam is Paradharma. The transcendentalist has very clear conceptions. So for us to become, you know, to advance in Krishna consciousness and become fit transcendentalists and fit to deliver by both word and deed the message of transcendence, these teachings are imperative. They're not optional. We have to have a proper discrimination. and live our lives accordingly. Not just theoretically, but in Prabhupada's words in Bhagavad Gita, purport, beyond even the possibility of engaging in fruitive activities for sense gratification. That standard of transcendental, at least know that's where we're headed. When a goal is well defined, it is easy to take the steps to reach there. Prabhupada says, and conversely, if you don't have a clear sense of goal, it's very difficult to progress towards the goal. So goal is well defined. And that which is keeping us away from the goal is also being well defined. I'll end with this. Just this morning, I'm having an internet problem, or a server problem with my PAM host. I was trying to address that while my computer was on, and message came from China, from a devotee in China. You know, this is a classic. How do you deal with anger when there's an older devotee that kind of bossy and controlling and, you know, pushy, and, you know, my whole body tenses, and, what do you do? I'm going to write back to them, read this verse, study this section. You know, with knowledge comes detachment, and stronger with devotion comes detachment. But devotion, fortified with this proper understanding, so it's see what it is. It's the modes of nature acting, and detached from it by fixing your mind on transcendence. Well, easier said than done, but that's our method. So we work on both sides to that which strengthens our devotion and thereby detachment, and, you know, proper sambandha again, which strengthens our devotion. And these allows us to have the proper conception of things. Not like, well, you're supposed to like that behavior of the person that's bossy and, you know, harsh and pushy. You don't like the behavior, but you don't need to get all tensed up about it either. Because what's that going to do about the behavior? Nothing. Probably aggravate it. Because you'll be all tense and they'll get more bossy. Life of transcendence in a dark place. Material world, place of darkness. Any comments or questions?
the material energy across all the ages, is it the same? Because in Satya Yuga, if you look at it, people were living in the mode of goodness, and naturally, like when the age got degraded, is it the age is getting degraded, or the material energy is increasing its power, or the people got degraded because the age became like that? How was that compared and contrast?
Well, if I had multiple choice, I would create another option besides the one that you just presented. Yayatam mam prapadyante tangstataiva vajamyaham. As The living entity has regard for Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. So, because the living entities have polluted aims or misdirected desires, that which starts in the world of goodness becomes darker, darker, darker. It's becoming darker because of the living entity's polluted aims. And then at the end of Kali Yuga, it's so dark, the Supreme Lord comes and makes it white again. So here's a visual image. Here's a big vat of, or container, bucket of white paint. And they take an eyedropper of blue, squirt it in. An eyedropper of red, and squirt it in, stir. No longer white. It's off white. But it's, the modes of nature work in such a way that it's not just because I squirted some red and some blue, that's it. Because with the action that's in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance, there's a reaction. It brings about another contamination to the white. Now how much white do you have to add to make it white again? Well, there's still going to be off-white. And then there's going to be reaction to the modes of passion and ignorance, and even the mode of goodness has its tinge of passion and ignorance within it, although goodness is prominent. So just continue, you know, through the Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, it just gets darker, darker, darker. So then Kalki Avatar comes and annihilates everybody, and then it starts over again. So with that visual image, now go back to your question. What's the effect is clear, what's the cause of the effect? It's the living entity's misdirected aims. Seeking happiness in ignorance and in passion, separate from the Supreme Lord. Then it's reciprocated. What's described is how at the end of Kali Yuga, when Kalki comes and annihilates, there are personalities residing in higher realms, and they descend into this realm and begin Satya Yuga. They're not affected, but they're transcendentalists. They're not affected. And they begin. Satya Yuga begins. It's clean. This, you know, your question. It's clean. And then there's offspring. And, you know, tinges of passion and tinges of ignorance. They're the bucket of paint example.
That is the case, I mean, in Satya Yuga, even the planet the Bhulok becomes so transcendent.
It becomes infused with the higher modes of nature by the presence of these elevated souls and the absence of the others, because they got annihilated.
So in that case, the living beings, even the higher planets, are even much more purer than that.
That's my understanding. You know, it's like, is Kali Yuga only on Earth, or is it all over the place? It's all over the place. So the way your question started was, is material nature the same always? Material nature is neutral. The living entities, Supreme Lord is neutral. The living entities, we're not neutral. Now, within all of that, it should be said, the Lord has His plan. But it's the plan of lesson imparting. And so with lesson imparting, there is the option. And people misuse the option, and so things get degraded. And it gets so degraded, He comes and starts it all over again. It's cyclical. Time is cyclical. That's part of the Lord's design. So we could say, well, it's his doing as things degrade. It's His doing. But He's just reciprocating with the living entities. You know that passage from the first canto where Maharaj Parikshit is confronting the personality of Kali, and he spares him. Of course, part of he spares him is because the personality of Kali is very clever and he surrendered. But it's also mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj knew this is the Lord's plan. This is the age of Kali. You can't kill Kali, then I'm spoiling the Lord's plan. So what's the Lord's plan? He wants degradation. He wants elevation. But those living entities who are so inclined to degradation, there's an agent. He's a broker, a degradation broker. And he's very active. He solicits business. It's a good marketing plan. Gets people to quarrel over nothing. And darker. So there is some place for the view that there's a plan of the Lord for this cyclical thing, because time works in a cyclical fashion. At the same time, he's neutral. It's just to allow the living entities the opportunity. You step back from that one. Why creation? Compassion. The Lord wants for the living entities to regain their highest possible state of consciousness, their dormant love for Him. The material world was created for that purpose. And the others, living entities, wish to enjoy independently from Him, so they can't, so here's an illusory thing, creation, where they can try for that which is impossible. It doesn't exist. Happiness apart from Him doesn't exist. So that's another purpose of creation. House of detention and house of reform. Prison.
Across the ages, you know, like process of bhakti is almost the same. I mean, Satya Yuga, like people had to do extreme.
Well, the form was different, but the essence is the same. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, why can't it be like I mean, in this age, I mean. Namaketra is mentioned, but even people are very hard even to take that form.
Sure.
In Satya Yuga, it was equally hard because they had to do the extreme austerity, even though they were in the mode of goodness, they had to meditate for 60,000 years,
etc. So what's your?
You
have a better design than Krishna's. We'll vote you in.
Why, you know, like there is some relaxations, you know, why can't be like, you know, there is an easy, little easier process, because when we try to do...
There's free will. For two things. Krishna is very kind in all ages. And some submission unto Him is not optional. You know, it's necessary. Submission unto Him. He's kind. So He makes that submission unto Him process suitable for the age. The submission unto Him, you know, the bhakti principle. And for those that are more qualified, the bhakti principle application requires some effort, and here it requires some effort, you know, but don't ask for no effort. Don't ask for no submission. Why doesn't He make it so that there's no submission? I'm not saying that you're saying that, but it's necessary. And both, commensurate with the misuse of free will, there's darkness. And on the other side, commensurate with our submission to the Supreme Lord, there's detachment, or there's light. So the design of the process is appropriate for the age. There must be some submission. And so this one's easier, because people wouldn't take it unless it was easier. They wouldn't take that. You know, anyway, they go to a yoga class. So, you know, anyway. For what? Not for transcendence. for something commercial. You know, reduce fat, like Prabhupada says. Become peaceful. They feel good. They go to the yoga class because they feel good, or it increases health. So he goes to the yoga class. There's no motivation for transcendence. And, you know, kirtan, people do kirtan that are not devotees because it feels good. And then they're commercializing it. It's just, you know, it's the degradation of the age. So Krishna is very kind. And he wants us to some submission, please. Sarvadharmam paritnyaja mamekam sharanam braja. Some submission, please. Yes?
Hare Krishna, just thank you for the next class. You talked about like workplace and all.
And school. Yeah?
So my the way I'm doing things is like my current understanding is that we do our work as a sense of duty and service to our family. But at the same time, there is a desire for a result. But when the result comes and it could be the way I want or it could not be the way I want. My understanding is, okay, this is the plan of Krishna. And either way, what choice do I have? And if it is the plan of Krishna, so I have to accept it. So, how is that different from what you earlier alluded to?
How is that different from what I earlier alluded to?
Like, you talked about the consciousness being totally in relation to Krishna doing it.
Well, the description that I heard just now is performance of duty with detachment. Performance of duty for so as a householder, a family man, this is my duty. And it may come out this way, that way, and not under my control anyway. So, doing my duty with detachment. That's karma yoga. And karma yoga is a subset. Those things, those elements are a subset of bhakti, but bhakti is not identical with karma yoga. So now how do you transform the karma yoga into bhakti? You know, a lot has to do with the quality of, you know, the topic that I was speaking about, which is what you're asking, is the quality of, I'll borrow from Bhaktisiddhanta's language, in proportion to how one's consciousness may have become or has become purified, similar to the point made yesterday evening about there's no substitute for purity, in proportion to how one's consciousness has become purified by the process of bhakti itself, one will see Krishna. The eligibility to see Krishna, say it conversely, is the purity that one may have attained by the proper following of the practice of bhakti. So the practice of bhakti, besides, in addition to the direct devotional practices, you know, what we do in our morning, it's how we see Krishna within what we do besides when we're chanting japa, when we're in the workplace. So this is a philosophical description of how to see. The last five verses of Brahma Samhita are right on topic with what you're asking, because after all of these wonderful ocean of truth revelations given by Lord Brahma in his Brahma Samhita, in his Govindam prayers, and there's a break, that's over, then Krishna speaks. Having heard the prayers, he speaks to Brahma. My darling, you're concerned, paraphrase to keep it simple, you're concerned about the fact, now you have this nice realization, but you also have this propensity for material activity. In his case, creating a universe, in our case, it's being a responsible family man, or whatever it is, you know, in relation to matter, our duties in relation to matter. So you're concerned that A and B, A, your duties in relation to matter may eclipse this wonderful realization of Krishna. And the other, B, you may be concerned that you're pursuing your devotion to Krishna may interfere with the proper execution of your duties in relation to matter. So let me answer that doubt. And the rest of is his answer to that doubt. But in short, it's dovetail. But higher than dovetail, so dovetail is I join my practices of bhakti with my worldly duties, and that there's lists of categories and subcategories of those categories of worldly duty. You do them for Krishna, not just do them as a duty because it's my dharma as a householder. That's, you know, varna ashram. That's good. That's how we manage, again, Bhaktisiddhanta's language and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language, Gona Dharma. Gona Dharma means secondary. Then there's primary. And if we join the secondary with the primary, then the secondary becomes spiritualized. The goal of that secondary is here. Seeing Krishna. Even within the false ego. Read it carefully. That's what, you know, the verse is saying, and then Prabhupada is giving his explanation how to. So it bumps up what you said to another, you know, application challenge. The intelligence has to be an effective transcendentalist living as a grihastha or living in the world, living as a student. You have to, you know, students have to learn gobbledygook, and whether reading, you know, the Bhagavatam, you know, Big Bang and evolution and gobbledygook, and then they have to be transcendentalists, you know, so there has to be a parallel intelligence. Know how to operate in the workplace or in school and get the result, get the A in your exam and get the work product finished in the workplace. Meanwhile, this parallel intelligence must be there. And it's nice. It's not like, oh, too challenging. It's nice. It's the connection to Krishna nice. Even in the workplace. So it's not just I'm doing this because I'm taking care of my family responsibility.
So, like what you mentioned, Maharaj, like doing things like in the material world, sometimes when you do it, it just feels it's so mundane, like it's almost just kind of...
No, it's because we're not seeing Krishna. Is it possible to see Krishna? Answer, yes. Question, how? Here is the answer. You know, we're lazy. Darn it. And then we suffer. Like you just described, you know, so mundane and it's boring and, you know, let me out of here. But we have our psychophysical nature. So, you know, we're working, we're married, and you know, the stuff we have to... We're paying the price for our attraction, affinity for enjoying matter. And there are parts of in that affinity for enjoying matter that are quite displeasing. In fact, from a transcendental position, it's all displeasing. But here we are, we have this body. We have to make the best use of a bad bargain. So you accept the, you know, the unpleasantnesses, but you cultivate bhakti. And, you know, in those opportunities, like this person was saying, you know, in the China question this morning, or your question just now, you know, there's certain things that are just like repetitious and boring and mechanical and yuck. So try to see Krishna there. Not just like, you know, you're being slapped around so that you'll understand you don't want to do this anymore. That's not seeing Krishna there. That's renunciation out of frustration. That's not seeing Krishna. Yes?
Just sort of in light of what you were saying, it seems like some of these so-called mundane activities that we do are, there's like a smaller connection or a more indirect connection to Krishna. Like, yes, we can try to see it in everything, but it's different from that, hey, there's some activities that are so focused, like when you're chanting and you're setting aside the time to chant, it just seems like that's a different level. That's a more direct.
It is a more direct.
Versus the indirect, you can try to see it, but it seems a little more.
Exactly, it's more.
Stretching the limit, or it's more.
However,
diluted.
May I modify what you just said based on what Krishna says to Lord Brahma, and what Bhaktisiddhanta says about what Krishna says to Lord Brahma? If done in the way that's described there by Krishna to Brahma, that is as liberating as the direct. Cool, huh? I want to go there, where it's as liberating as the direct. So then you have to apply. You have to understand and then apply. Otherwise, it's secular. And the secular is, you know, I don't like it, and stuff. Or, okay, I'll move it up a notch and say I'll do it religiously. I have a duty to my family, and so I'll do my duty to my family, and my happiness is in the mode of goodness that I'm doing my duty to my family. When it's, you know, that's not seeing Krishna fully. And one can see Krishna fully and have that as liberating. In other words, so the contamination starts with the soul's aptitude to enjoy independently. That's what brings us. And then we're here. And we have mind and senses that are contaminated. Now, the soul is trying to be, you know, Krishna-centered, direct. And then, you know, there's the mind and the senses that want to, even when we're doing our direct, they want to go somewhere else. And we're doing the something else, you know, they're not seeing Krishna at all. At best, it's the mode of goodness, but they're not seeing Krishna. So there's a teaching how to see Krishna in that as well as in this, in the secondary as well as the primary, the worldly as well as the direct devotional. Yes, the direct devotional is direct devotional. And it makes the secondary possible to be spiritualized. But when properly spiritualized, it's as liberating as the primary, as the direct devotional activities. we may have our preference. I want to increase, move the fulcrum over a little bit and have some more direct devotional activity, as you know, more and more and more and more. However, we have a body and we have to deal with it. And so investing time with the body and, you know, our affinity for matter program, that can be as liberating if done properly. That's our teaching. And it's how Kapila Dev is speaking to Devahuti also. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.